Good evening and welcome to Lakeshore Public Radio on 89.1 FM. I'm Tom Lounges, your host of Midwest Beat. Midwest Beat is a program all about music and the people who make it. And tonight, we've got a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. And he's quite the legend on the Skins as well. I'm talking about Doug Cosmo Clifford, legendary drummer of Creedence Clearwater Revival, who has spent the last quarter century or so, along with Stu, his sidekick in CCR, Stu Cook, in Creedence Clearwater Revisited. I had the opportunity to work with those guys at the Porter County Fair a couple of times and have interviewed both of them over the years. And I'm excited to talk to Cosmo again. It's been about a dozen years since we last connected, and he's got a good reason to talk. You see, he's got a solo album that was just reissued from 1985, The Magic Window. And we're going to play cuts from it, and, well, we're going to get Cosmo on the phone. But first, let's let the music do the talking and give you a little taste of The Magic Windows with Doug Cosmo Clifford. We'll have Doug joining us. Get your dancing shoes on. Don't let go. Now, that's a peppy little tune. It's a toe-tapper. You could have put that right between songs from, say, Greg Kinn, Michael Stanley, The Cars, back in 1985 when this album first came out. I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Midwest Beat. That was Don't Let Go. It's got that real peppy toe-tapping 80s kind of groove, but still sounding very contemporary today in 2020. Doug Cosmo Clifford is our guest tonight. He is the co-founding member drummer of Creedence Clearwater Revival. He is also been in the on the throne for Creedence Clearwater Revisited for a good quarter century or so, and has so many other things between those points that he has done, including this album. Doug, are you with us?
I am, Tom.
Good to hear from you. Are you still out in the Reno area?
Well, I'm there for 8 months of the year, and then winter months I spend in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay.
That's where I am right now. I'm sort of under house arrest, as it were.
Yeah, well, at least you picked a good place to get stuck.
Yeah, it's starting now, though, to turn a little warm. So It was 101 today here.
Wow. I wish we had a little touch of that here in Chicagoland.
Ah, I can relate.
last time we spoke, I want to say it was maybe a dozen years ago, you were actually on the golf course with Stu. You and Stu were golfing, and you were handing me the phone back and forth. I didn't want to interrupt your game, so you kept handing me back and forth. And
not much to interrupt.
I just remember that was a very interesting interview. We were live on my other station at the time, and you kept calling each other goofy names and joking around on the course, and it was one of the more colorful interviews that I had done at that point. Are you still playing? You still active on the course?
I haven't played golf for 5 years, but I'm going to take it back up again now that I've retired from touring. I had my right shoulder completely rebuilt, and the doctor said that if I made a bad shot, which was certainly not out of the question in my game, I could undo it, and then that would put me and my band out of work for a long time. So I gave it up, and now that I'm not doing that anymore, I'm going to start. I'm not sure when I'm going to do it, but sooner than later, pick up the sticks.
So when was the last time you actually were drumming?
A couple of months ago, we finished our tour, and it was bittersweet, of course, you know. But I've got some other issues. I've got Parkinson's also, so it was either retire or add Shake, Rattle, and Roll to the set list.
With Revisited, you guys kept the music of Creedence Clearwater Revival alive and well. And on behalf of the fans, I do thank you for that. I had the opportunity to MC for Revisited a number of years ago at the Porter County Fair in Northwest Indiana. And you guys did a bang-up job. And you're recording your Recollection album and things like that. Just an amazing collection of musicians that you didn't miss a beat with all that stuff, given the situation that was going on at the time. I do thank you for keeping it alive.
Well, I thank the fans. Stu and I both thank the fans. And nobody was playing the songs, including John Fogerty. And we thought, you know, this should be heard. This should be played. It should be felt, hitting you right in the chest and getting your heart rate up. And that's what we did. We had a five-year plan, and it ended up being five times that.
I was going to say, it's at least 30 years you guys were out there, wasn't it?
25.
Yeah. Is Stu still playing, or is he retired as well?
He's retired as well. He's built a nice place in Roatan in the tropics and enjoying the good life. So, yeah, probably having a marg right about now.
I remember talking to him the first time when he was with Southern Pacific, and that was a different sound for him. And after the original CCR kind of fell apart, you guys all went on and did your things. You worked with Tom Fogerty on some projects. Stu went and did Southern Pacific. You were dabbling. You did the Cosmo album in 71 or 72. And then you did this one in the 80s. And I don't know if you heard or not, but as I was commenting, Don't Let Go easily as a radio programmer, I would have put that in between The Cars and Greg Kinn and Michael Stanley and some of those more poppier sounding groups of the era. I just don't remember this album. Did it not get a lot of push? Was it officially released? Or
it never came out.
Okay. That's a shame, because it would have done well.
Yeah. Well, people are telling me that now, and I'm just saying, you know, to me, it sounds not like more 80s than the other side of it. It still sounds pretty fresh and new. It's new to me because, you know, it's something that I realized that I had in the vaults, and 35 years ago that I recorded it. So, it was fortunate that it even played.
So what made you decide to reissue it now? Is it just because you're retired and you had time to dabble with it? Because I understand you kind of took it in and tweaked it and tooled it a little bit.
That's true. We did a little surgery on it, but that was exactly what I wanted to do. I knew I was going to be retiring, and I didn't want to not do anything. I was real anxious to get this thing out because it's like I say, it's new. There's a lot of fun music on it, upbeat and positive messages in there. So, and especially now with what's going on with the pandemic, people need music more than ever. It's medicine for me. So
it is.
I'm putting medicine out and hoping that, you know, that somebody will have a better day having listened to one of these songs.
Well, we're going to listen to another one right now. Again, my guest is Doug Cosmo Clifford, founding member of Creedence Clearwater Revival. You know him from Creedence Clearwater Revisited. And now we're getting to see Doug on his own with the Magic Window album. And, well, let's play the title track, which leads it off. This is Magic Window on Lakeshore.
Daydreams, looking through my window, wondering what I'm gonna do. Maybe I'll find a certain someone who will know.
Looking Through the Magic Window with Doug Clifford. Taking you back to an album that was originally recorded in 1985, never released, sitting in the vault all these years that we could have been enjoying this. And thank goodness it's finally out. It came out this past week. I understand it was streaming earlier a week or so, but it officially has come out now, correct, Doug?
That's correct. Friday the 24th, which is also my 75th birthday. So,
well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Throw a little birthday present out there and share it with the world.
Now, you have released Just Another Girl, which we'll get to a little later in the show, as your first single from this. Tell me a little bit about the new world that you find yourself in. Of course, you go back to the late 50s when you guys first started jamming, and of course, Creedence in 67 to or 71, 72, and then all the other things you've done, which we'll dabble on or touch on. But right now, you're in a world that's different from anything that you experienced as a recording artist in the past, with the digital things and the online and the publicists and the major labels are gone. You're kind of your own island now to market this. What's it like to choose a single and to market it like that?
Well, it's really fun because I'm out. I released it on CD Baby, which is an independent record distributor. But you don't sign a deal with them. You pay a small fee for what they do, and you're the label. You do what you want when you want. So that's a tip for you young players out there who write songs and sing them or perform them. If you want to get them out, check out CD Baby, because there's a fountain of many, many good things lying in there, and you don't have to be at the mercy of the next release that's coming out that's going to get you put you back at the end of the line and start over. So that part of it is really, really good. I'm able to do what I want to do, and then I have I've got a publicist and an independent promotion chap. I've got my internet stuff going on, and it's pretty cool.
Now, you also have the physical CD that we're playing here too. Did you do a lot of physical pressings? Are you going to be in the brick and mortar stores? Because they are coming back now that vinyl's back in. And on that note, are you thinking at any point of maybe reissuing some of this on vinyl, even limited edition?
I definitely am, but what I have to do, though, is I have to wait and see how it does. If I had success with it, then I certainly would do that. But to go out and print up a bunch of vinyl and things aren't going so well, I'll be putting the vinyl in the garage in the locker that I found the album in.
Now, with this out, the single "Just Another Girl" came out April 9th on the internet formats. How has it done? I know it's only been 19 days or so, but are you happy with the initial result, the feedback you're getting?
Oh, I'm really, really happy with the feedback I'm getting. I'm getting reviews that are you would pay money for. it's just been accepted, and people really don't expect much from me. I was a drummer in the band and in a great band, but the drummer nonetheless, and to come out and be the guy that's the writer on all the songs, writer, co-writer, singer. I've been singing in the shower for years, but mm-hmm. to come out of the shower and sing on a record that different deal, and then I'm co-producing it with Russell DeShiel, who played lead guitar and also engineered the project. So I couldn't ask for a better acceptance from radio, print, and people in general. I'm a very happy guy right now.
All right. Did Russell work with you on the tweaking aspect of this, or was he there in the original recordings?
He was there during the original recordings, but I had him do the surgical work. It wasn't really, we didn't do that much. We, of course, remastered the project with the great George Horn. I've known him for 50 years. He's mastered a lot of great records. over the years. And so we had him at the very last. But I got rid of a bridge in one of the songs that, you know, I put in there probably just because I didn't have a bridge in there. So that's not a good criteria for, you know, for being creative. It almost worked, and you know, and I'm really glad as I finally came to my senses that it had to go, and out it went, and it just really made the difference, and turned the song around, and a few other little things. He added a guitar part or two, a rhythm track for sure, in "Born on the South Side." That's my sort of my where I came from, a card that I play. So, you know, we only had the two track. We didn't have the multi-track, so there wasn't much we could do. We were limited to what we had mixed in the first place. But he's a talented guy, and that's why he's my co-producer and old friend. I mean, I've known Russell for 45 years. So it's and he was retired, kind of sitting around wondering what he was going to do, and I said, you know, well, how about a project? So here we are.
Sounds like something out of a movie.
We're in a lot of movies, so maybe that might just work.
Now, with the original recordings, as I understand it, you recorded this in a home studio, which back in '85 was kind of cutting edge. A lot of people weren't really doing things other than demos at home studios.
Well, I had an Ampex, a 16-track, a good old Ampex, and I had a beautiful Trident board, which was the space-age board at the time. I had some nice outboard gear that worked just tremendously, and it was at Lake Tahoe, my house in Lake Tahoe. We were 1,000 feet above the lake, so we had this magnificent view of this wonderful alpine lake, and that's the magic window. There's glass in the studio that overlooks the whole thing. I had a lot of glass in that house because of the views, and a good place to work, on anything really. And if I was working on writing or something of that nature, that's a good place to get up there and get set to be creative. I practiced a lot of singing up there, out the magic window. I said, "Come on, I need some magic in these vocals."
as you mentioned, a lot of people perceive you, well, he's the drummer of the band. I had no idea. Right. I mean, I knew of the Cosmo album because I had a copy of that many years ago, and I didn't know about this. Like I said, and obviously why it wasn't released, but no one thinks of you as a songwriter or a singer or a producer, and you've done all of those things, not only on this album, but with other artists. But why did you not get more of a exposure, I guess, in that aspect with CCR in the original days? I mean, obviously John was the focus on the songwriting, but were you involved in any of that at that time?
Not as a somebody that was picked out and hey, come on and help me write this song. It was where I would add to, I guess, the creative part of it was grooves. Find Suzy Q, for example, taking a rockabilly song and making it a quarter note powerhouse dance groove, and doing the same thing on Born on the Bayou, but changing the foot mm-hmm. pattern, keeping the quarter note power, which really opens that up the space for the guitars. It makes a real big difference. People don't realize the things like that from a drum set that's not playing any notes or chords, mm-hmm. but it can have a tremendous effects, positive effects, and also make it swing.
Well, you listen to the Ronnie Hawkins version of Suzy Q, and you listen to the CCR version, and it is night and day difference. I mean, the drums and the bass, but mostly the drum groove that you're talking about, gave you guys that swamp rock sound. And I think we called it that because we had no idea what to call it. It was such a unique sound at the time. You guys had your own sound.
Well, and you know, I was the only guy that wasn't playing a guitar, so that helped me because I knew more about it than they did. I had something to talk about as far as their guitar playing was concerned. It had to really make sense with what I was doing. So otherwise, I'm just kind of flapping in the breeze there. So, you know, we were a unit. We started when we were 13 and started recording when we were 14. So we were a very tight unit, and that's really what gave us our sound. And then, of course, the material led to that as well. But we were very disciplined and always rehearsed whenever we went to record or do anything.
It was interesting because you guys were known as the Gollywogs, and I never was able to figure out where that name came from. What is a Gollywog?
It didn't come from us. That wasn't us.
It wasn't?
That was the owner of the record company and / manager.
Okay.
We hated it. We hated it, and worse than the name was the outfits that he put us in. I don't know if you ever saw.
I didn't see early shots. No.
Oh, it was pitiful. The day after a gig, I could hardly move my neck because I played with my head down the whole time. And, you know, it was just so embarrassing.
Wow. Let's play another song. And one before we play it, I want to talk about, you've mentioned it already, I was born on the South Side. Now, when I listen to this song, I hear a lot of R&B in this song, but not so. You reference Motown in it, but I don't hear the Motown sound as much as I hear like a Southern R&B sound, like maybe the Stax, you know, scene somewhere down in that area, or you know, the whole Georgia kind of groove with R&B. Where did this song come from, and what inspired that? Because you're a Cali boy by birth, aren't you?
Yeah, California boy. I loved R&B. I taught myself to play drums by listening to the radio, and then of course buying records and doing needle drops, where you find the area where that you want to listen to over and over and over again, and you pick that needle up as it's going around on the record, and then you drop it ever so gently and perfectly. And you could see what I was working on by looking at the record. There would be a gray band that I sort of wore out, picking parts to learn. And then, of course, I also listened to Top 40 radio, which would have quite a mixture of things. It's not like radio today. You could have James Brown and then Percy Faith and his orchestra, you know, so... But they did play a lot of R&B, Little Richard, Fast Domino, and those chaps, and that's what really moved me more than anything. I could have been a drummer in a blues band very easily, just because I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's play this song, "Born on the South Side," and again, it's a lot different than what we've already heard on "Magic Window" and "Don't Let Go." You're going to hear a variety of styles on this album as we continue to spin through it. So, my guest again is Doug Cosmo Clifford, and you are listening to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Let's get born South Side style.
I miss the last school, listening to the Motown side.
Doug Cosmo Clifford. Born on the South Side, that is track number 2 on the newly released album, an album called Magic Window that was recorded back in 1985 and is just now seeing the light of day, thank goodness. Doug, what was it like when you found the tapes and listened to them? I mean, what was your initial reaction?
Well, my initial reaction was I didn't want to play them because I didn't know if they were going to turn to dust. Uh-huh. Right in front of me. So I had to check that out, and I had a friend of mine who is an engineer and teaches at the University of Nevada, and he said, well, we can bake them. And I said, well, they're not brownies. He said, no, there's a technique where you actually heat these things up, and there's, you know, you don't do it in your kitchen. There's a place in L.A. that does this. Anyway, he had them baked, and there were like a total of 10 reels. I've got a lot of other things in there that are all master quality things, but it's all song written as far as why I did it. But I write with a lot of different people, so mm-hmm. that's why there were so many reels. It came out great, and we went from there to digital. So now it's kept forever. If I would have tried to use the tapes from standpoint of a producer, they would have kind of turned to dust. So. Hmm. So that part's all done, and so it made it real easy to get Pro Tools out and do a little surgery here and there and add an instrument here and there. And I think we even added a harmony background vocal or two, and not a lot of things really, just enough to catch the spots that I missed the first time around.
So there weren't too many dropouts or anything like that because of the age?
None.
Wow.
Absolutely none.
How did you have them stored?
I had them stored in a garage, which is a big garage with, of course, a cement floor away from the sun. So it never got really hot in there. I had them in a very low humidity environment. That helped. And, you know, just never got involved in moving them around or opening boxes and dropping them on the floor. Mm-hmm. I just forgot about them. Wow. And yeah.
Now, when you did hear them, were they as good as you remembered them? Better? Worse?
Better.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of time had gone by, and I kind of thought, you know, wow, how did I not get that one out there? Well, I know how that happened. Richard Perry was going to sign me to his label, and the Pointer Sisters were on there at that time, and some other people. And I had gone to L.A. with that song that we just played and Just Another Girl, and recorded them down there in L.A. and met everybody. And so he was going to sign me, and the week he was going to sign me, he had a nervous breakdown. And his company went belly up. So that kind of, maybe that was one of the reasons why I shelved the tapes. I don't know. There was also a drought, and I have a biology background relating to especially to beetles and things of that nature that were killing the forest because of the drought and creating a horrific potential for a cataclysmic fire. And so I put that project together, and it was huge. And it became the number one program in the nation, so deemed by the Department of Agriculture. So they were sending guys up from Washington, D.C. out to check out my program, and I was spending a lot of time. It was, you know, 40, 50 hours a week, and you know, it was all for the love of doing it, and so I wasn't making any money at it. Not that I, you know, was in trouble or with that. It was just a project that came from my heart, and I knew I could do some good and maybe, you know, save the forest and educate people about what fire does and is supposed to do in a fire in a forest environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a lot of the wildfires again the last decade or so. Oh. I mean, poor California is devastated every summer. And are you still active in trying to help educate on some of that?
No, not really. We put a well. I talk to people about it all the time, but we had a book out on how to do it, and that is still available up in the Tahoe area, and I know a lot of the firemen have taken it to other places when they've left the area and so forth, and it's around somewhere, but fire is supposed to be the culling factor in a forest environment,
mm-hmm.
and what happens is we put the fires out, so the fuels are never consumed by low level fires. The low level fires don't burn hot; they don't have a long flame length that do a lot of damage. They just burn off the smaller fuels and keep things in balance. And but when you take that away, then the fuels build up and build up and build up. So when they go,
they really go.
Decades of fuels, and it's explosive.
Wow. Well, that sounds like you had quite a career. If you wouldn't have made it in music, that would have been your calling.
Well, I'm pretty fascinated with insects and environments, habitat, things of that nature. So still get a kick out of it.
With the other tapes that were in the vault, have you baked those as well? Are we going to see another project come out of you before long?
Yeah, there is. I have one more album with me as a vocalist. Then I have several others with other vocalists and different players. I have one with Bobby Whitlock.
Hmm.
We had a band and almost got a deal, but he ran out of town on me just before that was going to happen. I still kind of upset about that, but I have the music, and that's some pretty good stuff there. And then Steve Wright from the Greg Kinn Band, who you mentioned the Greg Kinn Band
mm-hmm.
earlier in your show. He was from my hometown. Steve and I were called the Clifford Wright, and of course we were the writing team for that. And so I've got a different vocalist, a kid named Keith England. Sounds a lot like Rod Stewart, and so I've got that. I've got probably a total of six albums, counting the one that we're listening to now or playing.
Well,
now.
Hopefully it won't take you too long to get these out there. I mean, I know you don't want to dump them all on the public at once and glut the market, but sounds like this was a fascinating find. When Wendy sent me this album, I was not sure what to expect. Like I said, I like Cosmo back in 71, 72 when you released that. I thought that was a great album, which unfortunately that's not available. Are you going to reissue that?
It's been reissued.
It has.
At the 50th anniversary for Creedence. That album was not an artistic venture. It was an experiment.
Well, you had a lot of great players on there.
Oh.
Duck Dunn was on there. I mean, you had everybody on there.
Ducky's one of my best friends, and I loved him dearly. And then the Tower guys, I just talked to Dave Garibaldi last week. The drummer and I are very good friends, and we took them on their first U.S. tour. And so, I liked R&B growing up. All the records I was buying were black records, and for the most part. And then Elvis got in there a little bit, and I had never played with a horn section before, so I got the Tower Boys in there, and we cut all those tracks live. So when we had them in there, we were a 10-piece band.
Wow. That's a great record. I'm going to have to look for that. I didn't know it was reissued. I looked a couple of years ago and didn't find it, and I thought, well, it's probably long gone. So I'll have to look for that. That was about 2016. So the 50th was what, the 17, 2017?
18.
Okay. Well, I'll have to dig that one out and order that, and hopefully it's on vinyl. If not, the CD will have to do.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you give me your address, I can send you one. I know people. I know where I can get you a copy of that one.
Excellent. I will do that. Let's play another song. Let's play the single, Just Another Girl, which is out there right now, and you can listen to it and order it online, as well as the whole album. But this is the single, Just Another Girl. It's doing very well, according to my guest, Doug. And we'll be back with him a final time after this. Stay with us on Lakeshore. The Magic Window album. Doug Cosmo Clifford is my guest. That is his music. And he is our guest here tonight on Midwest Beat. Thanks for tuning in and supporting National Public Radio. This is Lakeshore. Doug, it was interesting. Well, that song was playing. My engineer, Jose, who's considerably younger than you and I, said the music we've been playing tonight reminds him of something that would be on a John Hughes movie. And he said, this whole album could be a soundtrack to a John Hughes movie. And I think that's a great idea. That song alone, Just Another Girl, could be the title.
Wow. Well, I'd like that.
Yeah. It's got that sound that is 80s, but yet is contemporary. It doesn't sound dated, but it's got that reflective groove that takes you back and has you singing along. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the drum tones on there, some electronic drums, some different sounds that you don't necessarily hear today, that was big then. But at the same time, with the electronica thing out there now, you're hearing a lot more electronic albums.
That's exactly right.
For you as a drummer, I've only seen you play the acoustic drum kits and stuff. I know Todd Rundgren dabbled a lot with electronic drums, and so did the Cars and a bunch of other bands. Are you comfortable with those? Do you like those, or do you prefer the acoustic drums?
Well, these were tom-toms only.
Okay.
They were all the rage back then, so I was being contemporary. But I don't have any acoustic drums in both my houses, I have Roland electronic drums. And the reason for that is both my houses are on golf courses. And also my studio joins my wife's art studio. She's a world-class painter. And I can just put headphones on and nobody knows I'm there. So it's a pretty cool thing. And then if I want to really get wacky, I can switch some of the programs to outer space. So have a little fun with it.
Now, speaking of your wife being an artist, will she be doing some of the graphics on the forthcoming tapes that you have?
Well, actually, no. My son did it. He's ran our website for Revisited, and he's running mine right now. And what he does, and what is kind of required for what I need to put my music out, he's more adept at it. My wife's busy painting. Right now she's got a great painting going, and so but I'll tell you one thing. She did the artwork for Creedence's first album. There's a big arch, and with wild little animals in it. If you get a chance to look at it, that's she did it. And back then, she was paid $200 for it, and we thought we had died and gone to heaven. we were starving musicians.
right. Work for hire piece. Those were great back. Yeah. You know, $200 was a lot back then, but. So
yeah,
you guys,
it was.
You guys have been together a long time then. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we were high school sweethearts. We've been together 57 years, married 52.
Wow. God bless you for that. That doesn't happen very much, especially in the entertainment business. Is there a secret, yeah. Doug?
Yeah, just a happy wife, happy life.
I love that.
You know, and there's a lot of truth to it. No, it's just, you know, keep the lines of communication open. Even if you're really pissed off, don't get out. Don't go into the other room and sleep in another bed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to say anything.
Right. Just be there.
You're really pissed. Just be there. Things All like right. that. If you go by a flower shop and you sort of have an extra minute, yeah, it wouldn't hurt to get a nice bouquet and bring that home. Just little things.
Mm-hmm. You sound like a romantic at heart.
Well, I am.
what's the game plan for promoting this now? I mean, you've got this great album out there. You're not touring anymore. So how are you going to get this music to the people? I mean, other than just posting it on the internet retail sites, how are you going to get people, their ears to wrap around this?
Well, I've got I'm looking to radio. And or whatever it is, I'm not really. What I know about streaming is that first time I saw what they were paying the artist, I started screaming.
Right.
Know,
yeah. You won't get rich on a stream.
No. And it's kind of funny, because I've always gotten a kick out of people saying, "Oh, we should get our music free."
Right.
Well, wait a minute. If you like music. And you want to have new artists coming up and putting out quality music, you better support them.
Right.
It's would you go to work all week and then come up to the pay window and tear your check up and hitchhike home? I don't think so.
Right. Right. Well, hopefully, a lot of people are going to turn on to this. I know I'm going to play it for everyone I know. And I'm looking forward to the new stuff you're going to come out, the new old stuff, if you will. And thank you for putting it out, finally, because this is an album that needed to be heard.
Well, thanks so much. I mean, that blows my mind. I alluded to it earlier. I'm surprising a lot of people. It's just they're not expecting that. And like I say, my album was to an experiment to see if we could use the factory as a recording studio with a remote vehicle coming in and out and renting that out for capital to record acts that we wanted to record. Mm-hmm. So it was more of an experiment than, you know, an artistic endeavor. I didn't practice singing for it very much. I didn't write very good songs. I just put them out there. I had three cover songs on there. So it was, you know, it was some of the you know, the band was the best part of it. I mean, right. I had these guys, you know, I was shitting in the tall cotton with the crew I had. I'll right. tell you.
But if you did have to, if you did have to do cover songs, I mean, Doug Sam, Steve Winwood, those are good guys to cover.
Well, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I produced two albums with on Doug Sam.
Oh, I really enjoyed his stuff. I really enjoyed that Tex-Mex sound.
If you can get a copy of, let's see.
Was it his solo stuff or the Sir Douglas stuff?
Solo stuff.
Okay.
But I had Augie Myers on one of them, you know, so.
Another great player.
Groover's Paradise is, you get a copy of that record. That's a good one.
Well, I'll have to look for that, and we'll have to get you back on to talk about it.
Sure, I'd be glad to. And then another one called Daydreaming at Midnight is another one I produced. And then I played on one in the early 70s, and that was a Scandinavian record. We had a number one single in Sweden. Mm. So I went out and played on that tour. It was fun, but you know, this is what I'm doing now, and I'm really excited about it, and I'm very proud of it, you know, and I just hope I you know, without going out and touring behind it, I can't tour anymore. My body's beat up, and I don't know if I mentioned Parkinson's, but
yeah,
that's in there, and.
You're going to be busy for a while with these tapes, and we're going to be busy listening to them. Doug, thank you so much for being part of the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Tom, send Wendy your address.
I will. I just want to remind the listeners that they can keep up with you at DougCosmoClifford.com. All the info on Magic Window is there, the streaming, the links, and you can get a copy of your own. Thanks, Doug. We'll do this again.
Tom.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our final track, Don't Leave Me Alone Tonight. We're going to bring it up now for you. The news is coming up. Keep it here on Lakeshore.
Happened to me on a Saturday. I was on my way to nowhere. Something happened that I can't explain. My life changed with you there. Kind of moment that you dream about, wanna hold on forever. Fell in love, or is that obvious? I guess you don't have to be too clever.
One thing I'm afraid of.
when I found my way to your heart. You know I need you each and every day. I'd lose my mind if we part.